This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and it's time for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. The House is voting today on President Obama's plan to combat the Islamic State movement. It's an amendment to a bill that will also fund the federal government through December. And for years, the U.S. Senate has been following a secret set of rules that describes how they can and cannot spend taxpayer dollars, among a bunch of other things. The official Senate guidebook was obtained by USA Today and published earlier this week. We'll hear about that. Paul Singer takes us behind the scenes with his commentary on Congress every week at this time. Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Going so far so good. And yourself, Veronica?
It's going pretty well, thanks. Well, I want to start with this House vote today.
Yep.
It's apparently not an authorization of military force against ISIS or ISIL. What exactly is it?
Right. It is very clearly not an authorization of military force. Congress is authorizing the administration to arm and train Syrian rebels. This is the group that we had wanted to arm. The Obama administration wanted to arm these folks to fight against Syrian President Assad. Now they want to arm and train them to help fight against ISIL or ISIS or the Islamic State. So what they're saying is that you may now officially, formally begin training and arming these fighters. They are not saying that we may launch a war in Syria, and they are not saying that we can introduce U.S. ground troops in the area. That continues to be off the table. And Obama said again today that he is not planning to send ground troops. That is not part of his strategy.
Now, is this vote actually necessary to U.S. action, or is this a formality?
The Pentagon has said this is necessary. They have been using back channels to get weapons to the Syrians, but they needed an actual public declaration to allow them, they needed a law passed to allow them to legally, publicly engage, basically have the Defense Department directly engage with the Syrian forces there. Keep in mind, this is also a temporary measure. Because it's attached to this short-term spending bill, it only extends through December, so Congress will have an opportunity to sort of revisit this whole issue then to see whether they are getting what they expected out of it.
Well, is there anyone right now in Congress who's saying, you know, hang on a second, this is tantamount to military force, so we should have a vote about that?
Yeah, you've got a number of people sort of raising the issue of whether we should be involved at all. I mean, I think it was Loretta Sanchez of California today in the House saying, you know, if you start to engage in something like this, we're going to have American troops there doing the training, and sooner or later we're going to be involved in a ground war. It's just sort of the next, it's kind of a slippery slope argument. You will find, I think, some conservative Republicans and some liberal Democrats agreeing that this is not a good idea, specifically because it basically reintroduces American forces into the conflict, and they're very much afraid of what that might lead to. But they're going to be outnumbered. I think this vote is going to be pretty one-sided in the House in favor.
Is there any conflict here in the sense that the Republican-controlled House would be giving the president, you know, kind of what he wants heading into fall elections?
Well, yeah, except that I think the Republicans feel that in some ways this was their agenda in the first place. And the Republicans have been saying all along that we needed a more forceful policy in Syria and in the area, a more forceful reaction to the Islamic militants. To some degree, this is Republicans endorsing Obama's strategy, which is not far from what the Republicans wanted in the first place. Whether or not this is good, keep in mind, for either party going to November campaigns, it's hard to really tell. I'm not sure that the American public's going to be all that excited about more forceful military action in the Middle East again. So there's some question about who this is really good for on a political ground. But I think the leadership, both parties, Democrats and Republicans in the Congress, have said, we just need to do this. It's clear this ISIL group is a threat, and the American military needs to engage them in some way.
Now, briefly before we move on, you are hearing some voices now calling for boots on the ground in some fashion, including Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who said so on Central Time a few weeks ago. How big a deal is that?
Well, I mean, again, this is the slippery slope argument, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, at the moment, there are, I think, 1,500 U.S. military personnel on the ground in Iraq. helping to protect American facilities or American personnel or critical Iraqi facilities, helping to train the military there. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're on the ground. What the issue is going to be is if one of those people, God forbid, is killed, or if there was an attack on American forces there, do we begin to introduce more troops? And this is where the slippery slope argument comes, that, you know, sooner or later, there probably are going to be American boots on the ground, or at least there's going to be somebody's boots on the ground. It's a question of whether America is training and equipping them or is, in fact, providing the troops.
So moving on, USA Today unveiled some interesting news earlier this week about what has been apparently guiding the administration behind the scenes in the Senate for a long time. It seems like it's sort of skull and bones for the Senate.
Yeah.
What is this guidebook you got a hold of?
You know, I'm really embarrassed by this one because I've covered congressional ethics for years. And we've talked about all, you know, in the House, there's a handbook that basically describes what you're allowed to and not allowed to do when spending your office accounts. That is, a taxpayer-provided account for running your congressional office.
To the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's $2 to $4 million a year per senator. In the House, this book is public. It's on their website. You can read it, and it tells you what you can and cannot do. In the Senate, every time we've gotten to one of these things, we've had to ask someone to send us a copy of the rules or where are the rules, or and we can never really find the thing. Finally, it dawned on me that I could get someone to just leak me the whole book, and they did. This thing has never been public. The committee that prints the thing wouldn't release it. The government printing office that prints it wouldn't give it to me. We're like, what do you mean this thing is secret? These are the rules you live by. How could it be secret? I'm like, well, we don't release it because it has some security information regarding the Congress, which is true. There are 10 pages about basically what do you do if there's a bomb threat. And again, it's written for Senate staff and senators on how you run your office. So there is some stuff about security and how to get an ID badge and stuff like that. But we thought it was absurd that this thing had never been public. And I was frankly embarrassed that I had never before just tried to have someone give it to me. Now we have it. We post it on the website. Everybody can look at it.
Which is quite a coup, considering the Library of Congress doesn't even have a copy of it.
What was
the most surprising thing in the book?
Oh, I don't know. The most surprising thing about it is how Byzantine the United States Senate is. I mean, once again, you forget that they have rules for how many potted plants a senator can borrow from the botanic gardens. They have rules for how many pieces of paper you are allocated as a senator. 1 1/3 sheets for each adult constituent. I mean, you know, it's the stuff that could have come straight out of the Central Committee of the Soviet Union in the 1930s. You know, it's just so completely Byzantine and bureaucratic. It's just wildly entertaining.
So is the takeaway here that now we know a little bit more about what's allowed ethically when you senators are spending money, taxpayer money, running their offices?
Yeah, and where this really, where the sort of rubber hits the road here is we came to this book this time around because we've been studying how senators are using charter flights. Using taxpayer money to pay for charter flights. And what we discovered is a bunch of the lawmakers chartering aircraft to travel around the state, which is legitimate. But we want to see the rules for how and when they're allowed to. And in fact, what happened after that, after we started writing those stories, we began to discover several senators had been paying for trips with taxpayer dollars that were not proper. They were, in fact, campaign trips, not official trips, and they should have been paid for out of the campaign. Now that this book is public, anybody can follow a member of Congress's travel, see where they are, and go look it up in the book. Does this fit the rules of something that should be funded by the taxpayer, or is this something that should not be funded by the taxpayer? That's the kind of stuff this rule book tells you, and I think it's important that the voter is able to look at it and say, hey, I think my senator is doing something that is not within the rules.
Well, congratulations on getting a hold of it, Paul, and some little light reading there if people want to go to bed.
300 pages of fun.
So we'll talk more about another story we didn't get to, hopefully next week. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Veronica. Have a great day.
We've been speaking with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time to keep us up to date on what's going on in Congress.